Hey, future doctors, welcome back to Spoonful of Sugar. Today's episode is on aortic aneurysms and aortic dissections. Please welcome our host.
Hey, future doctors. Thanks for tuning in to Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Ishan Ashwat. I'm currently a student at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, and I'll be your host today. Today we're talking aortic aneurysms and dissections. Definitely some intense stuff, and they often fly under the radar until it's almost too late, which is why I'm here to break it all down. Let's start with the case study to set the scene. Imagine you're an ER doctor, and a 55-year-old man is rushed in. Heavy smoker, history of hypertension, high cholesterol, the works. To make matters worse, he's got intense chest pain, like a crushing weight on his chest. But here's the thing, it's a migratory pain. Plus, he's struggling to breathe, sweating buckets, and his heart's racing, with his blood pressure through the roof, and there's a distinct murmur every time his heart beats. What's going through your mind as a doctor in this scenario? Well, aortic aneurysm or dissection should be at the top of your list with those symptoms. So to really understand what's going on with this patient, we need to lay some groundwork. Let's start with the aorta itself. In its simplest characterization, the aorta is an artery, but it's not just any artery. It's the main pipeline carrying oxygen-rich blood from your heart to the rest of your body and its end organs. And just like any good highway system, the aorta has different sections with very important names. For example, we have the ascending aorta arising from the heart, the aortic arch with that graceful curve, and then the descending aorta, which is broken down into the thoracic aorta in the chest, and the abdominal aorta, you guessed it, in the abdomen. Now, surgeons often refer to different parts of the aorta, particularly in the arch and the descending aorta, as zones of the aorta. And these are particularly useful in terms of referencing specific locations that are of interest during treatments for aneurysms and dissections, such as endovascular repair or even aneurysmal replacement. Let's move on from the classifications of different aortic locations and move more towards what is actually going on when an aneurysm or dissection actually forms within the aorta. Just like a garden hose, the aorta has layers, particularly three layers, comprised of an inner layer, an outer layer, and some reinforcing material in between. And these, in particular, are known as the aortic intima, aortic media, and adventitia, in terms of going from inside of the aorta to outside of the aorta. The intima is that layer, inner layer, in direct contact with the blood flow. It has to be smooth and a little bit slippery. Then you have the media, which is the muscle, giving the aorta that strength and flexibility to withstand all of the contractile pressure that occurs during systole. And finally, the adventitia is a tough outer layer holding it all together. It's really a symphony of form and function, but sometimes even the most well-designed systems can develop glitches. And in the case of the aorta, those glitches often come in the form of aneurysms and dissections. And those are the ticking time bombs, the undetected time bombs that we're often talking about. So before we jump into the nitty-gritty of those, let's make sure we're all on the same page. What exactly is the difference between an aortic aneurysm and a dissection? Well, imagine a balloon, right? An aneurysm is like a bulge or a ballooning in the wall of that balloon, similar to a weak spot that's about to burst. Whereas a dissection, think of that same balloon, but now imagine a small little tear in its inner wall, and the air pressure starts to separate these layers of the balloon. That's a dissection, which is a tear within the intima of the aortic wall. I just want to briefly mention the potential etiology of aortic aneurysms and dissections. Classically, it's thought of that aortic dissections stem from what is known as cystic medial necrosis, which often occurs in that medial muscular layer of the aorta, which leads to degeneration and therefore allows for the intimal tear to occur. However, it's also been suggested by various studies that the vasovasorum, or the supporting structure of blood vessels around the aorta, also contributes, once it's dysregulated, the formation of aortic aneurysms and even dissections as well. So because the aorta has different sections, both aneurysms and dissections can really occur anywhere along its length, each with its own unique set of challenges. And that's where the Stanford and DeBakey classifications come into play here. And the Stanford system is most commonly used, as it's quite simpler than the DeBakey system, and it divides dissections into type A and type B dissections accordingly. Now, it's all about location here. Type A involves the ascending aorta, that first part we talked about in the thoracic cavity, while type B involves the descending aorta, extending from the chest all the way down into the abdomen, to the bifurcation of the iliacs. Now, type A dissections are a major concern as they pose a direct threat to the heart and all those crucial blood vessels, the head vessels, branching off from it. The DeBakey system, while we won't get into too much about it, it gets even more specific about which parts of the aorta are affected. But for now, I think knowing Stanford type A and type B is a great start. So, let's switch gears and talk about those red flags that you want to think about when considering aortic aneurysms and dissections. If you're a doctor and suspect a patient might have an aneurysm or dissection, what are some of the things you're looking out for? Identifying who's at risk is crucial, both for prevention and early detection. Because if you know you're playing with fire, you can be more proactive about protecting yourself against these risk factors. So the major culprits when it comes to aortic aneurysms and dissections are often a perfect storm of factors that converge to create these problems. Now, the first one we must think about is high blood pressure. Imagine a constant pounding of blood against the aorta's wall, day in and day out. It's like water wearing down a rock over time, right? Eventually, something has to give. Then there's atherosclerosis, which is the buildup of plaque in the arteries. That's just like a clogging in your plumbing, restricting flow and putting more stress on everything in the aorta. And last but not least, smoking, right? Because smoking is good for absolutely nothing in terms of human health. Now, smoking damages those blood vessels, making them less elastic, more prone to developing these dangerous weak spots through degeneration of the medial and even intimal layers of the aorta. And particularly thinking about questions you may be asked on step two examinations about risk factors of aortic aneurysms and dissections, I think the main thing to think about is what is causing a dissection, and that really is hypertension, right? Hypertension is really what's going to cause the separation of those layers. Whereas for aneurysms, oftentimes smoking will be one of the main culprits predisposing patients to aortic aneurysms. Particularly in this case, abdominal aortic aneurysms or descending aortic aneurysms. Now, an important factor to consider is genetics as well. It seems to be a bit out of our control, isn't it? But some genetic conditions, like Marfan syndrome or Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, now, these can affect connective tissue, which is vital for the aorta's strength. Think of it like building a house on unstable ground, where even a minor earthquake can have disastrous consequences. And then, there's always age. As we get older, our blood vessels naturally lose some of their elasticity, becoming more vulnerable to damage over time. It's like an old rubber band that loses its stretch as it keeps on stretching with time. Now, let's talk symptoms. If someone has an aortic aneurysm or dissection, what are they likely to feel? Well, that's where things get a little tricky. Aneurysms, now they can be sneaky and often grow slowly without any noticeable symptoms until, well, it's too late and they rupture. That's why regular screenings are often crucial, especially if patients are at higher risk of aortic aneurysms because of age, family history, or certain lifestyle choices, such as smoking. Now, some people with aneurysms, especially larger ones, might have back pain, abdominal pain, or a pulsating sensation in their abdomen, particularly in reference to descending aortic aneurysms in the abdominal aorta. Now, those seem like they'd be pretty hard to miss, right? Dissections, on the other hand, usually announce themselves pretty dramatically. Now, sudden, intense pain, often described as a ripping or tearing pain, that's migrating from the chest to the back. These are classic indicators of symptoms associated with aortic dissection. Another thing that also may be seen is differences in blood pressures between the arms or legs, depending on the location of the dissection itself. And that's really because we have two lumens, right, in the dissection. A true lumen, which is getting the original blood flow from the left ventricle and from the heart, that's oxygenated and is able to perfuse the end organs. And then we also have a false lumen, which is caused and formed by that tear, the intimal tear, and is often expansive and often is formed of clot and old blood. These are the big red flags for a possible dissection. And in these situations, time is critical and of essence. So patients need to get to the hospital ASAP. So when these patients arrive to the hospital, say the team is aware that a patient has an aortic dissection, what are the first things that we will do to kind of work up the dissection, right? Well, it will start with the medical history and physical exam, like all presentations. However, imaging tests are really the key to confirming the diagnosis of aortic dissection. Now, there are a variety of imaging methods that can be used for detection of aortic dissection, and each imaging method has its own pros and cons. Now, ultrasound is quick, painless, and great for visualizing abdominal aortic aneurysms, often the first line of defense for screening, right? So ultrasounds, think of them as kind of a quick check to rule things out. Thoracic aortic aneurysms and dissections, now these are different. They usually require a CT scan or MRI, which provide a much more detailed look at the aorta, the origination of the true and false lumens, and how expansive and extensive they are. Now, transesophageal echocardiography, TEE. This sounds intense, but it's a bit more involved than ultrasound, and it involves inserting a probe with an ultrasound transducer down the esophagus, which gives incredibly clear images of the heart and the aorta. Now, while it doesn't sound fun, it's actually quite useful for emergent situations. So think of TEE and emergent situations when it comes to aortic dissections. And this can give almost immediate confirmation to guide treatment very quickly, and it will provide answers accurately, sometimes even at the bedside. Now, if it is a non-urgent situation, CTA, or CT with angiography, is often considered the gold standard of imaging when it comes to aortic dissections. So think of these two dichotomies, right? Emergent, non-emergent, and then you'll be able to think of your imaging scenarios through this hierarchy. So we've discussed risk factors, presentation, symptomatology, and imaging methods for aortic aneurysms and dissections. Now what about treatment? Let's break it down. Starting with aneurysms. Is surgery always the answer? No, not always. In fact, small, stable aneurysms, especially in older adults or those who might not be able to tolerate surgery well, we often recommend a watch-and-wait approach where the aneurysm is monitored with imaging tests, likely on a yearly basis, to track any changes in size. However, if an aneurysm is large, growing rapidly, or causing symptoms, then surgery is usually the best option. Now, what are the surgical options for aneurysms? There are two main approaches: open heart surgery or endovascular repair. Now, open surgery is the more traditional approach, involving making a large incision to access the aorta and replace the weakened section with a synthetic Dacron graft. And this is a major surgery. Now, on the flip side, new endovascular techniques and endovascular repairs are minimally invasive and have been developed so that these dissections can be repaired via catheter, where a catheter is inserted through an artery, usually in the groin, and guided to an aneurysm, where a stent graft, a tiny flexible tube made of fabric and metal mesh, is deployed to reinforce the weakened area from the inside of the aorta itself. So it's really like threading a tiny sleeve through your blood vessels all the way to the aorta. And endovascular repair is a less invasive, quicker recovery option. However, it's not really suited for all patients. The size, shape, and location of the aneurysm are all factors in determining the best approach for each patient. Now, what about dissections, right? These present very differently from aneurysms and are also treated differently as well. Treatment for dissection really depends on the type, location, and severity of the tear itself. Type A dissections involving the ascending aorta, now these are surgical emergencies. The risk of complications like aortic rupture or damage to the heart valves through aortic regurgitation is often very high. Type B dissections, which are those in the descending aorta, now these initially may be managed with medication to control blood pressure and reduce stress on the aorta. This is often known as anti-impulse therapy, where different medications are given to decrease the systolic blood pressure, in particular, less than 120 millimeters of mercury, right? And this reduces the shear stress on the aorta during systole and diastole in the cardiac cycle, right? Oftentimes, to initially stabilize blood pressure, the systolic blood pressure, a calcium channel blocker, such as nicardipine or nifedipine, could be used to reduce blood pressure, while medications such as ACEs and ARBs are particularly useful in the long term to manage hypertensive crises during aortic dissections. However, for patients with complicated type B aortic dissections, surgical intervention is often the first step that's taken. And what do we mean by complicated type B aortic dissections? Oftentimes, this involves some form of aortic rupture. In this case, probably a contained rupture, where a real rupture may result in rapid death. Hypoperfusion, whether it's clinical or radiographic evidence of hypoperfusion, and intractable pain are all factors that contribute to a complicated type B aortic dissection, and this involves direct surgical repair. Now, we've spoken about some of the treatment methods and modalities that are used to treat aortic dissections and aneurysms, but what can really be done to help with preventing these conditions in the first place? Well, early detection is key for these pathologies, and regular screening for those at higher risk is a must. Now, can you think of any recommendations that are currently in place for screening when it comes to aortic aneurysms in particular? Now, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends a one-time ultrasound screening for abdominal aortic aneurysms, specifically for men aged 65 to 75 who have a history of smoking. For women in that age group who've never smoked, the recommendations aren't as clear-cut and are still developing. To wrap things up here, let's have a quick summary of what we talked about over this entire podcast. We delved into the anatomy of the aorta, explored those mysterious aneurysms and dissections, and unpacked everything from risk factors and symptoms to diagnoses, treatments, and preventive methods. Thank you again for listening. If you found this episode of Spoonful of Sugar helpful, please subscribe to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org and post them under the link for the episode. Now, good luck with studying. Remember that if you ever have an SOS moment while studying, Spoonful of Sugar is always there to help you.